Why am I pro-choice? Because when a lady is pregnant and it's not a living thing until it's actually out of the mother's womb.
Okay, well, John, let me ask you this question. If a pregnant woman, if the fetus is not a living thing within a pregnant woman, why do you need abortion at all? It's not alive, so you don't need to kill it.
Well, under your explanation of alive is, yes, it needs nutrients to grow. Mm. Correct. I mean, would you say a virus is living? No, it's not. It grows.
For biologists, virus is sort of a gray category of growth because a virus doesn't grow by cellular reproduction. It hijacks cells and creates genetic copies of itself that then, you know, go out from it. But if you look at things, if the definition of life, if something is living, if it takes in food and nutrients and grows by cellular reproduction, under that definition of life, an unborn embryo or fetus is clearly biologically alive. In that case, would you agree with that definition?
Sure.
Okay. But I agree with you that not everything that's alive has human rights. I mean, slugs are alive, bacteria are alive. We kill those things all the time. But I do think there's certain kinds of living things we don't kill. We got to figure out what those things are. And for me, they would be human living things. So if you are growing by cellular reproduction, you are a whole organism that is developing. You're not a mere body part. You're a whole organism that is growing and developing, and you have human parents and human DNA. Well, then I would say you're a biological human being under that definition. Would you offer a contrary definition, or what would you think?
Sorry, I didn't hear half of that.
Let me just re-summarize it, John. A human being is an individual member of the human species. If you're an organism that is developing and you have human parents and human DNA, you would be a human being.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Would that definition apply to a human embryo or a human fetus?
It's an embryo. It's not a human being.
Well, why don't we pick this up then across the break then? Because that's an interesting objection you've raised. Would you be willing to do that? Okay, great.
Thanks, John.
Before we went to the break, John, you said that there's a difference between being an embryo and being a human being. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we could go on this all day, but the whole idea is that, you know, an embryo, if you take an embryo out, it's gone within a couple of seconds.
Well, hold on, John. I want to go back to this because this is a very crucial point. What is an embryo? A human embryo? What is it?
An embryo is basically it's part of the developmental stage of any type of organism before it's actually living in an actual, you know, out in the environment. Basically, I don't know too much about the developmental processes of any type of biological organism,
sure.
But I understand the embryo is part of the early stages of development.
Sure.
Correct. So it's not my understanding of a living organism is that it needs to be breathing air. It can consume food. It basically can live on its own, you know, having to be inside of somebody's womb.
For something to be a living being or a living thing?
A living thing. But, and you know, the whole reason I called in, to be honest, was I don't want to get sidetracked, is that I've never heard the idea of being lumped into suicide as being a pro-choice advocate and I don't agree with suicide, but I don't agree with the lumping in of abortion and suicide. It brings in a bad connotation to the pro-choice era.
Well, that's interesting, John, because I think a lot of people who support the right to have an abortion also support things like the right to engage in assisted suicide, for example, that they'd say just as a woman has autonomy over her body. In fact, for many people, who would balk at abortion because it involves another living thing, they would say, well, suicide only involves yourself. So the way that pro-life is connected, how people define it, like I define it as respecting the right to life of all human beings, born and unborn. And I do believe laws that allow for suicide, legalizing suicide, do not protect the lives of born people. But for me, though, I really do want to talk about this issue involving whether an embryo is a human being or not, because that really is like, I mean, that's really the crux of the issue right there. And your concern, what you said is, and I would agree with you on two out of the three points, that for something to be living, it has to be growing, it has to be taking in food, but it doesn't have to be outside of another being's body. I mean, a parasite, for example, a tapeworm or bacteria, they're living beings inside of my body. But I can kill them not in virtue of the fact that they live in my body, but because they're not human. They're not human beings. But I would say for a human embryo, they are alive, they're growing. It's the earliest stage of the life of that human being. I just don't see the moral relevance of the fact that this human being lives in his mother's body instead of outside near his mother's body. I just don't see the location of the child changing his value. What do you think of that?
Well, that's the idea. Is the whole conversation is when does it become an actual living thing? I get it. You know, within 8.5 months of a pregnancy, that's straight up murder. You know, but the whole idea is these laws are in place to protect the women that are vulnerable, that are 16, that did not have a choice, that literally were raped, and their whole life is ruined because they have this unborn child in front of them. And the father is completely out of the picture, is, you know, and what are they supposed to do?
Right.
Raise this child and put it into the system and put him back into, you know, foster care? I mean, is that a way that you want, you know, these children to live?
Okay, sure. John, let me jump in here because we're losing your audio a little bit. Hopefully, maybe we could bring it back one more time and see if it improves. But what I would say is that your reasoning there is interesting, that if it's just about whether the unborn is not a living being, it doesn't matter the motivation of the woman who chooses abortion. If she just wants to go to Europe for 3 months and she doesn't want to be pregnant anymore, if it's not a living being, who cares? So we don't actually need to appeal to these very difficult cases if the unborn is not a human being. But if the unborn is a human being with the same right to life that you and I have, then we can't appeal to these difficult cases any more than we could appeal to, what about the woman, the single mom with a 2-year-old who loses her job, no one's going to hire her, she doesn't know how to take care of her child, is her child going to end up in foster care, and you know she's in a difficult position trying to raise a toddler, and then she decides, well, why not just euthanize this toddler? Just as we wouldn't kill 1- or 2-year-olds who live in extremely impoverished circumstances, we shouldn't kill the unborn just because they live in that same circumstance, if they're equally human beings. So I think the source of our disagreement is going to be over, quote unquote, the term, what is a living being? I would say that where you can live does not change how you ought to be treated. You know, people are you know, you and I could not live in the womb. You know, it's an aqueous environment. So maybe from the fetus's perspective, we're not people. A child can survive in the womb where we can't. We survive here where he can't. But just people live in different places. It doesn't change their value. So I'll let you have your last thought on that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll take the answer off air when I'm off. But I want to ask the question to – I always ask the question to people that are pro-life is you know, what should the woman do when she's 16 and gets raped? You know, what is your thought about this? Should she raise the child as her own, even though she didn't want it and almost died by being raped, or should she give it up to foster care? And thank you for taking my call. You know, I have these debates all the time with everybody.
Well, I'm glad you called in.
I need to hone up on my skills. So.
Hey, feel free to call back anytime. And then feel free to check out my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, as well, if you'd like to see a more extended treatment of the subject. So the question would be, what would be my advice for a teenager who is a victim of sexual assault who's become pregnant? And I've never had to actually give this advice in person to someone. In fact, my advice would probably be for them to talk to someone who actually is capable of helping them work through that situation, who's been there before, such as a volunteer at a pregnancy resource center, even one who had there are those I know who have worked at these centers who had become pregnant under less than ideal or criminal circumstances that could offer support and care for this young woman. But if I was to offer something, I would say that the bottom line is this for everyone who's involved. You don't respond to evil with more evil. Or I could put it this way. It's better to suffer evil than to inflict evil on other people. For example, let's say, you know, her rapist is caught. Maybe he goes to prison. Maybe not. Maybe he gets off. You know, he gets off, or he only goes to jail for a minimal amount of time. And she's terrified, and maybe her parents are upset and angry, and they conspire together. Let's kill this guy. Let's murder him ourselves. Many people would find that understandable, but at the same time, you would see that even that rapist has a right to life and can't be the victim of vigilante justice. And yet, if we agree, even in that extraordinary circumstance of this vile person should not be the subject of vigilante violence, then the child who is conceived in rape, the innocent child, should not be the victim of state-sanctioned violence against them in the womb. Rather, we should promote nonviolent solutions to the mother and child. And if we're concerned about the mother being traumatized by the crime that she has been afflicted with, I'd also be concerned about making her an accomplice to the death of her own child. How much more? There's one thing to have trauma from being the victim of violence. It's the other thing. It's something quite else to have trauma from being a afflictor of violence against other people. It's better to be a victim of violence than a perpetrator of it, because it is better to suffer evil than to do evil. I think that's even non-religious people can understand the virtue and wisdom like that. But I'm grateful you called and look forward to speaking to a lot of other people on this subject.